all countries need to translate goals into guns, commitments into capabilities, and pledges into power. That's all that matters, hard power. It's the only thing belligerents actually respect. Your continued investment and leadership are vital to helping Ukraine defend itself and to bring an end to this conflict, peace through strength. Now, if this war does not end, if there is no path to peace in the short term, then the United States, along with our allies, will take the steps necessary to impose costs on Russia for its continued aggression. If we must take this step, the U.S. War Department stands ready to do our part in ways that only the United States can do. This is not a war that started on President Trump's watch, but it will end on his watch.
He said hard power is all that matters. If you don't submit to whatever our agenda is, we're going to punish you. And if we can't punish you economically through sanctions, we're going to punish you in the way that only the U.S. can. I mean, what's that mean? What, they're going to bomb Moscow? They're going to assassinate President Putin? What is he talking about exactly? Well, then we're back to the Cold War. Russia has a dead hand protocol, just like the United States does. And that's fully in place. And I would argue that Russia is more in tune with that type of war game. And even these latter generations post-Soviet are much more aware and understand the full implications of this in the context of international conflict and geopolitics than the United States does. I really think you're in a very dangerous echo chamber in America. And I really, if I could, I would just reach out through the C-SPAN screen and slap all the Democrats across the face, because I don't see any real viable opposition to any of this madness coming from the other side of the aisle. And I'm saying that from somebody who is nominally conservative. You know, I've written off the Republican Party. I mean, forget about it. The anti-war wing is only about two congressmen and maybe a senator. But on the Democratic side, where are the conscientious voices? Where are the people that are going to balance this out? The American eagle needs two wings to fly. Otherwise, it's going to go into a tailspin, and you're witnessing that tailspin right now in front of our eyes.
And, you know, you go further, you know, with all of this belligerent talk, and when he says hard power is the only thing that matters, yeah, you're right. I mean, you can even use that two-winged analogy even on that. If you don't even have diplomacy on the table, if that's not even a viable alternative, then what is the only thing left for the other side to conclude? That they, too, must ramp up their military capacity because there's no alternative for diplomacy. So the only thing you're giving Russia from a position of strength is either capitulate to our demands or there's going to be more conflict. Now, I mean, no one on the planet in a human history from a position of strength and power is ever going to submit to somebody else because maybe they'll ramp it up here in their war. It's irrational. It's illogical. And yet it's not just the United States, because now then here in NATO, this meeting here by the NATO Secretary General, Mark Rutte, is talking up the military arm of his ideas.
As we continue to ensure our own defense, we continue to support Ukraine. Their security is linked with ours. This is not just words, but is reflected in the support we give to Ukraine. Thanks to funding from allies, we are providing Ukraine with critical U.S. equipment through the Prioritized Ukraine Requirement List, or PEARL. It is getting Ukraine the U.S. weapons it really needs to protect its people and to hold the front line. We started off even strong with six allies funding the first PEARL packages. And today, we heard from ally after ally about new contributions. More than half of NATO allies have now signed up, securing this crucial flow of support for Ukraine.
So he's talking about this so-called PEARL initiative. People may have heard of that. It's P-U-R-L, which is basically, we're going back to the Biden era. And what the Biden team did, and just, we always said that defense, the thing that it was called the Ramstein defense meeting. Now this is kind of a new one here, but it's the same thing. Everybody's come together to find out what they can give Ukraine to continue to fighting here. And interesting, because he says European security and Ukraine security are tied together. I want you to talk about this part first, because in my view, it is only connected because you make it connected, not that it is in reality. What is your view?
Well, we're having this conversation, and the reason it's so concerning, not just the fact that we have a proxy war in Ukraine that instead of being wound down in the first year of the Trump administration, it's now being escalated, and he's allowing the Europeans to escalate, which is disturbing in itself. But this is all being done in a vacuum, a void of no international treaties or agreements, all lapsed Soviet era missile agreements, bilateral defense agreements between the West and the Soviet Union, the anti-ballistic missile treaty, the INF treaty, the open skies treaty, all of these agreements that provided guardrails for this type of escalation. And I've said this on previous, I've said this for years about the game theory that's involved. And you alluded to this earlier. And so Mark Rutte, I mean, what is his qualifications for, declaring war on Russia? Like, where was he 2 years ago? He was nowhere. He is a typical, limp-wristed European bureaucrat that has been put into that position in order to regurgitate bullet points given to him by probably the defense industry and probably by Washington and who knows who else. But we're now in a strip away all the agreements, all the restraints, strip away the ideological framework that kind of kept the bipolar world somewhat balanced. At least it was capitalism versus communism. There was an ideological and political component, kind of made sense in that way. Now it's this pure power politics, and the West is attempting to run a zero-sum policy with regards to those they deem their enemies. And if their enemies don't submit, or if their enemies gain anything, it's a loss on their side. So what happens when you take away the ability to talk if the other party cannot resolve its grievances through dialogue, or in this case, it would be diplomacy? And this goes for Trump's political opponents at home. He wants to arrest, lock them up, or shoot at them rather than to have any political dialogue. So that's zero-sum politics at home, zero-sum politics abroad. It's going to lead to conflict. It just invariably does, and that's the number one thing that's missing here. And the other thing that's missing is the United States cannot expect that the current European leadership is going to somehow bail them out by providing some kind of a diplomatic off-ramp or something like this. There was always a chance in the previous international system that a France could, a Mitterrand or a Gerhard Schroeder or somebody, or a Helmut Kohl could step forward and provide some kind of a counterbalance or an off-ramp, and that kept equilibrium in the international system. It doesn't exist now with the European Union. It's everything. The thing about the European Union that worked during the Cold War is that every European country had its own foreign policy. Even though they're somewhat under the umbrella of the United States and NATO, there was still independent foreign policy. What's happened with the EU, it's congealed to a degree that there's almost no independent foreign policy amongst the EU. So it's not just NATO. Yeah.
When you see some like Slovakia, like Hungary or the Czech Republic or Romania, they get punished.
Yes. And that could be one of the potential incendiary flashpoints, would be a new front in Moldova with Transnistria engineering some kind of a provocation there, or with Hungary. That's probably not off the table, is inflaming or organizing some kind of a provocative incident involving Hungary that would open up a kind of a new front of concern, let's say, that would then, compel Washington to come in even deeper with more money and more arms. So I think we can expect that kind of thing. And we don't hear any moderate rhetoric coming from the UK. Certainly they want to ramp this up.
Yeah, no, nothing of that, as you'll see here in a minute. I want to ask you, I want to go down a path you opened here a second, though. And I want to broaden the lens back out, not from just today's comments, but back out larger, not even back to 2022, but maybe going all the way back to 2014, when the Western, especially the United States, and certainly a lot of Europeans engineered to overthrow the legally elected government in Ukraine, Yanukovych, because he kind of liked the Russian side. He was leaning towards Russia instead of the Europeans. And, well, we can't have that. And the people who voted in that guy, well, we can't have that either. So we have to engineer it and undo it and throw them out and then install somebody that was of our pleasure, which, of course, we know Victoria Nuland and the ambassador openly talked about who we were going to put in there. So that's on the record. It's open, et cetera. What is our message, is my question to you. What is the theme? What is the vision that the West wants to accomplish here? Because here's all I see so far is that we're using lethal power, political subterfuge to get our way across here. And I want Russia to compel and submit to my way of view. And I don't give them any other alternatives. So I'm shoving them further away from any kind of European security architecture in which everybody gets to live in peace and possibility for having prosperity, to one in which only our side on our rules gets to live in peace, and the other side will either submit to it or will have conflict with us, possibly even war. How do you see, and if I'm mischaracterizing something, what is the vision and the message that Western leaders offer the world?
Well, what they're articulating here is a total break from the past, the total break of the post-World War II order that at least recognized that there should be some indivisibility regarding security, starting with Europe, considering the nuclear powers that have missiles pointed at each other, that there would be a security indivisibility that has to be in everyone's interest and not just one party's interest. The way the U.S. has positioned themselves now, it's a path to war. It's a path to war. There is no other... I don't see any other way that this is going to end unless they're playing chicken. And we all know what a dangerous game of chicken that is. And then even if you're playing a game of chicken with the Russians, they're still going to demand and ask for the same things. Because Russia's already thought this out, because it's an existential issue for them. So they already know their priorities. They've already sent those to Washington in the communique to Tony Blinken in December of 2021, and it hasn't changed since that. And so for the United States, they don't know what they're, and that goes to your original question, Daniel. What is the vision? What is the vision? Is this has nothing to do. So there's no ideological. There's no ideological component. It's not free market capitalism versus communism. So there's not that. So what is this? Just total hegemony, total submission? Is this how do we describe this? It's a vanity project. So is this just a geopolitical vanity project for Western hegemony, for U.S. and Anglo-led Western hegemony? Is NATO's clearly turned into a vanity project for Europe, and they're struggling for their collective identity and ego with these organizations that are completely out of date. NATO should have been disbanded after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and instead they ramped it up. NATO went into hyperdrive on steroids after the Cold War, and that's part of the reason why we are where we are. So if we look at the long range arc of U.S. led policy from 1990 to the present, it paints a very dark picture. I mean, but there's always these opportunities to de-escalate, to veer away from confrontation, inevitable confrontation. But they haven't taken them. Instead, they just found creative ways to kind of continue the pressure on Russia. So again, it's an existential issue for Russia. It's not an existential issue for the United States. It's an existential issue for their collective imperial ego and hegemonic image globally.
And we seem to be exacerbating that and making it to where it could be an existential threat where one yes. doesn't presently exist.
Yes.
And I mentioned this with Mark Rutte here, this Pearl issue. Secretary Hegseth also went a little bit further to explain exactly what that is. And we're going to get back into this whole power politics things. Watch this.
Firepower. That's what is coming. We expect it is coming from NATO. And it was a historic summit just a couple of months ago, brought about by leadership of President Trump to say we need our allies to step up. And they did, and they have, in those commitments. Now those commitments will soon translate into capabilities, which is the most important aspect of it. And one part of that, of course, is Pearl, is the initiative where European countries buy U.S. weapons, transfer to NATO for the fight in Ukraine to bring peace to that conflict. And if there's anything we've learned under President Trump, is the active application of peace through strength. Yes. You get peace when you are strong, not when you use strong words or wag your finger. You get it when you have strong and real capabilities that adversaries respect.
And listen, let me just translate that into regular English or to regular speak. What he is saying there, and you again, tell me if you disagree with this, he is looking Russia squarely in the face, which is who the recipient of this primarily is, and saying, you will compel and submit to our vision of what the world is supposed to be like, and you take your place in it, which is out of the way and not doing anything that we don't tell you to do, or we're going to ramp up military power and one day may use it against you. Do you see it any differently?
Yeah, well, his statement says it all. He says, if there's one thing we've learned through President Trump, it's that the only thing that works is peace through strength. You only get peace if you ramp up the strength. Where has Trump delivered peace? If you consider a genocide in Gaza, that hellscape in Gaza, you consider that peace? Might be peace for Trump on paper, but it ain't peace for the hundreds of thousands of dead Palestinians. I mean, it's a farce. Do you think there's peace in Ukraine? How many Ukrainians, they're still digging graves at an alarming rate in Ukraine for all of the conscripts that are ending up dead after 24 hours on the front line? Is that peace? Is that the kind of peace? Like, what's Hegseth talking about? They're starting wars and ramping up wars. Trump's going to break the record for new wars by the time his first year is finished. So that it's you're dealing with people here that I think are just intoxicated on power, and it's this pissing contest. The Hegseth standing up there, cocksure, basically, yeah, we're gonna firepower, we're gonna deliver firepower, you know, and just how does this sound from a Russian or a Chinese point of view, or other UN Security Council members, or the rest of the world? They're like, well, clearly America's lost the plot. You've got a psychopath in the White House, and it's the sum of all fears for the rest of the world. And this bluff, this thing you can bluff your way to some kind of capitulation with nuclear armed states. I mean, this is it's beyond irresponsible, and Americans need to step up and admit and say that it's offensive. It's not offensive in the military sense. It's offensive in a political sense, and it should offend the sensibilities of civilized Americans first and foremost, if they still value their constitutional republic. Everything that Pete Hegseth is saying, the founders warned us about in America. The founders warned us about, and other erudite politicians have articulated over the years, including Ron Paul and others. And I can't believe I'm hearing this from somebody who's not even qualified to be head of the DOD or head of the Pentagon. It's clearly, if you took all of the qualified people for the head of the Pentagon and you stacked up their resumes, their CVs, I could probably get you 100,000 resumes, and his would be at the bottom if you went on pure qualifications. Yet he's selected for this position, and the disaster that you're seeing right now is what you're going to get. So this is what happens when you promote people to the level of incompetence. And these are people that are media actors.
Yeah.
So they're playing to the camera, but it's not just an act. It's not just an act. This has ramifications in terms of policy, in terms of how other countries are going to react.
Well, it does. And that's one of the things that Hegseth is really, really good at. And that is playing to the cameras. Obviously, he was skilled at that at Fox News for all those period of time, why he was selected here and how it's on display here. Now, I want to connect that with the danger of listening to someone like this who obviously has the ear of the president, who also seems to be listening to him, or vice versa. It's really hard to know exactly what happens behind the scenes, but we do know for sure they seem to be on the same page here. This is what worries me a lot. You mentioned this a second ago. Hegseth talked about it today, and that this belief that what President Trump has done with military force so far has compelled adversaries to bend to his will. And here he makes, and I'm not making this up, you can see it for yourself, Hamas and Russia in a similar vein.
I would also note a historic moment as well for a lot of things to happen, given what the president's been able to do in Gaza and throughout the Middle East. I think the world is seeing that we have a peace president who seeks that peace through standing by those that stand with the United States and stand for peace, which is what we saw there, and I hope we can see in Ukraine. So that's the focus of our efforts. We're going to be strong to bring that about.
We're going to be strong to bring that. So we coerced Iran, we coerced Hamas into doing what we wanted to there, so we can definitely do it to Russia. What do you make of that?
Oh, yeah, he brought peace. What peace? What peace? Is that the kind of peace that Hitler brought to Poland? Is that the kind of peace the Nazis brought to Belarus? Is that the kind of peace, you know, the Nazis brought to France? That's the kind of peace he's talking about. And if he spent more time reading history rather than looking at himself in the mirror, preparing himself for his press conferences, great hair, by the way, Pete, maybe he'd be able to understand some of these things. And another thing he might want to study is just basic game theory. And basic game theory says when you threaten the other side, and this has been worked out, umpteen models, I have three books on my shelf that explain and model every single interaction in sanctions and also in military threats, that when you threaten the other side, you're not, if they expect that you're going to punish them, even if they agree or capitulate, which the United States has a record of doing, then they're not going to comply. Almost 90+% of the time, the other party will not comply, whether it's sanctions or military threats.
And for those who may not know, I wonder if you could just kind of real briefly say, what is game theory? Because some people hear that and they think of like a video game or something, but it very much has to do with real life.
Yeah, it's modeling out every action has a reaction. And it's modeling out what the likely outcome of any type of altercation or argument or, sort of fight will end in. And as many erudite military historians have said over the years, that war is an extension of politics by other means. So you have to look at it in its totality. Political rhetoric, political diplomacy, negotiations, fighting, bombing is all part of the same. It's all part of the same continuum. So this is how Russia looks at warfare and diplomacy. And this is how many previous European leaders used to look at it. But we live in a different age where you have people that have almost high school level sophistication when it comes to international politics that are in positions of power. And that's a very dangerous thing because you have a big, big chasm between worldviews from the East and the West now. And I think there's so many unqualified people and charlatans that have been foisted into leadership positions in the West for various reasons. I think a lot of the talented people don't want to be in politics, and it's been like that for many decades. They don't want to serve their country because they've lost respect or they don't revere government as a noble career. So a lot of the smart, intelligent, talented people go to business and finance, whereas before they might have opted for serving their country, either in the diplomatic corps or in directly in politics. And so you just had a lot more considerate individuals, people that I think had a better depth and consideration of these issues than you do now. People that the chief envoy of the United States doesn't even know the regions, the names in Donbass, and kind of laughs it off publicly, like, oh, wow, I just didn't check. You know, I haven't had time to look at it.
Right.
You know, like that's where we're at.
That's important to know?
Kind of is. Yeah, it sort of is. It's just a basic mark of respect for the counterparty that you're meant to be negotiating with. What does that tell you? That tells you they have no, they don't care about the counterparty. Right. They don't care. They've got no respect for who's on the other side of the table. The only thing Trump cares about and his cabinet are photo ops. Signing ceremonies, photo ops, press conferences, victory laps. That's what they care about.
Patrick, one of the things that's curious, I mean, you talked a second ago about the resumes and the stacks of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who might be more qualified. In this day and age, especially in NATO itself, through some of the bigger powers, even the resumes that look like they ought to have the right kind of requisite skills, they also come to some, well, I mean, weird might be the best, or disconnected from reality might be the most appropriate way to characterize it, as exemplified at this same meeting here by British Defense Secretary John Healey, who seemed to be trying to be his best Pete Hegseth.
And Secretary Hegseth, I want to praise President Trump's essential leadership in securing that ceasefire in Gaza. That was peace secured through strength. And today, as we shift our focus back to the war in Ukraine, your presence here reminds us of President Trump's commitment also to secure peace in Ukraine. But until peace comes, Ukrainians, military and civilians alike, continue to fight with huge courage. Our determination must match their defiance. Our support must match Putin's escalation, and our role as members of this UDCG is to guarantee Ukraine's strength.
So his view is the same as Hegseth, and the same as the Trump, is that there's not even talking about negotiations, no diplomacy, absolutely off the table, only strength. Only thing that we can do is to force Putin into compulsion. So first of all, I'd just like you to comment on how it seems like, whether it's Hegseth or somebody who is on paper qualified like John Healey or Mark Rucho or any of these other people, where does that leave the alliance?
Well, first off, you have to recognize the Orwellian language that these people are using in public. He's saying that our commitment must match the Ukraine's defiance. It's all based on lies. It's inverted. Ukrainians are defying Zelensky. They're resisting conscription. There's thousands of videos on social media for the last couple of years.
Thousands.
Where they're hog-tying delivery boys, DoorDash delivery boys, and trying to bundle them into vans to go to the front line. That's the defiance, is from the Ukrainian people. But you have a president who's unelected, who is running a police state, a full-blown police state, and his Praetorian Guard are Nazis. That's the reality in Ukraine. So what John Healey, what is he talking about? Is this virtue signaling? The same, they have these canned lines, these brave Ukrainians. They're feisty and they want to keep fighting. As long as they have the will to fight, these brave Ukrainians, we're going to arm them to the teeth. And then we'll show the Russians, you know, who's boss. And so that's the defiance. That's the real defiance. It's not that Ukraine society, if you look at even bias polling, most people in what's left of Ukraine want an end to the conflict. But yet we're backpedaling. Trump's backpedaled on all his campaign promises and said they're escalating. They want to escalate the war. And then Trump says publicly, oh, we're going to take the Donbass back and Crimea and maybe more territory. Like, what are you going to back the Ukraine to invade another failed Kursk misadventure or a Krynki disaster that the Americans and the British pushed the Ukrainians and had thousands of them perish for no reason whatsoever. This whole thing could have been done in April of 2022 if not for the direct intervention of Boris Johnson and the United States intelligence agencies to egg on the Ukrainians to tear up the Istanbul Agreement at the time and fight the brave fight. The people of Ukraine have no say in any of this. They don't have elections. Zelensky is effectively a dictator. So what are we talking about? Are these Western leaders talking about when they're speaking for the Ukrainians? It's just unbelievable. And until peace comes. So what do you mean until peace comes? What is your definition of peace? Is it until Russia submits? Is that your definition of peace?
Well, and that's exactly where I wanted to go next, because the one thing that is completely noticeable by its absence is any, and unless I've missed it, you tell me if I have, but I don't see any of these people. I didn't see in any of the clips I looked through today, and I looked through a lot of video before we gathered these clips today, to where they say how this pearl and this whole mentality will compel Russia to do its will, where they say, all right, here's a logical path. If we do this, tomahawks, if we do this with more artillery, with more drones, some of the other things that are mentioned, this drone wall and some other things, if we do this, then that will then result in this on the battlefield, and Russia will then be pushing back. And instead of pushing back, they might have this idea that, okay, it would be in our interest to capitulate, or accompanied with all of these additional new sanctions, or working on a 19th package right now, et cetera. They don't even go down that path. I have not heard any path other than these bromides that you just mentioned and these bumper sticker words, but that there's no rational idea, meaning these are just actions devoid of any even logic to how they can work. So where does that leave us?
It gets back to it's all tactical led policies and no strategic led policies. So Pete Hegseth is Donald Rumsfeld with a grease haircut on steroids. That's, you remember Donald Rumsfeld? We're going to be a slimmer, leaner military, and we're going to focus on small attack groups, and we're going to scale it down and be more precise and more surgical. And that's how we're going to, you know, advance, you know, whatever our objectives are geopolitically vis-a-vis Iraq, etc. Okay, tactically led. But what's the ultimate? What's the strategic objective? What's the strategic vision? Then you're getting into worldview. Then you're getting into civilizational, philosophical questions. But these are things that used to be considered by statespeople, that used to be considered by very seasoned diplomats who spent their whole career working out these issues. And it used to be, and then the political class has to give orders to the military. Now Trump is trying to, I think, give a little bit too much deference to the hard power. And that's really, I think, indicative of a weak leader. That if the leader politically is extremely weak, i.e. he can't articulate deep concepts, or he can't inspire the public based on universal principles as previous U.S. leaders have done. We could name many of them, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, even FDR, and many others to a degree. Trump can't deliver that from his person, from his heart. He can't deliver that. So instead, he has to defer to the military, hard power, and the sort of intimidation, the international racketeering approach. Okay. And so that's problematic on many levels. And that's the big difference, I think, that you're looking at here. I personally, I am framing this as the intellectual corruption, and also a war on intellectualism in the United States. But it's indicative, attacking universities and so forth, trying to strong arm institutions, academic institutions, so they're not independent anymore. That's just a symptom, I think, of a bigger issue that's at play here. And browbeating and shouting down and intimidating and threatening any potential opposition voices that might want to oppose what we're seeing here. And also just keeping them out of government. There's been a purge, or at least a denial of access of plenty of qualified people that could be advising this president that are not. And then sadly, you have to watch Judge Napolitano's program or your program, Danny, or some of these other podcasts, and you see plenty of qualified people that could be steering the ship in a much better direction for the United States and for the world, but you don't have that. So we're all them, but the masses are showing up on these podcasts to hear sanity and to hear real alternative ideas and analysis. And so, but they're not getting it from government. So there's that gulf increases. The gulf under Biden was the gulf between the public opinion and the executive and the government. That's now only increasing under Trump.
Yeah.
So he's done the opposite of what he promised. He's done the opposite of what he promised and got the votes delivered for. So he's going to have to answer to his electorate, or at least he won't after 3 years, but the Republicans certainly will.